Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everybody, welcome, and thank you for listening to this episode of Marriage Therapy Radio. My name is Zach Brittle, I'm here with Laura Heck. You know, at the top of every episode, I always say, thank you for listening, and every once in a while, I pause long enough to remember, like, I really am grateful. I'm grateful that you're here, I'm grateful that you're giving us our time and your attention. It's not just a cliche that we utter, and I'm glad that you're focusing on your relationship. Today, we're talking about gratitude and generosity, particularly in the face of the idea that basically everything we do is made up, and we have some options and some choices about what we make up. And it's a really cool chat. I'm excited about it. Before we start, though, I do want to make one request. It's not quite a serious request, but it is a sincere request. I would love it if you would pause right now, go over to iTunes, and leave a review for Marriage Therapy Radio. Leave a 5-star review for Marriage Therapy Radio. Tell us what you like about what we're doing, what we're getting right. If you don't like the podcast, you don't have to listen to it. It's a free thing, and there's no reason to waste your time on something you don't like. But If you want to let us know what you don't like, just shoot us an email or, you know, write us and tell us what you'd like to see more of. We want to meet you where you're at. We want to talk about the things that are interesting to you. So please do that. But adding reviews and adding positive reviews really helps us keep the lights on, helps us keep our sponsors, and that makes it easier for Laura and I to keep going. Incidentally, another way to help us is to purchase from our sponsors using our codes. We have a sponsor of this episode, Factor. It's a meal plan service that I've newly discovered that I really enjoy. It makes it really easy for me to eat and run in the middle of a busy week. So check them out for sure. We're just trying to figure out the best way to meet you where you're at while staying energized and excited about the podcast. This episode does that for me. Again, we talk about gratitude and generosity, which are huge on my heart right now. And I'm trying to explore that with clients. And Laura and I explore that together. I would say in this episode, we meander for a little bit before we get into the meat of it, but I hope you'll consider that a feature, not a bug. We're trying to stumble through the world and through conversation like everybody else. And occasionally we stumble on things that are actually kind of helpful. And I think we do that today. This is a very cool conversation. Stick around.
I texted my running coach yesterday and told him immediately what had happened because there's expectations and he wants to know if I'm not going to be able to meet my expectations. And so I shared with him that I heard a pop. And pops don't mean anything, right?
Well, what did you actually do?
I was running with my pups through the wilderness like a goddess. And then I was no longer a goddess.
But did it roll over? Did your ankle roll over?
Yeah, I rolled it. I rolled it on the outside. So it.
And you heard a pop?
And I had headphones on and I heard a pop. That's where I was that must have been loud.
That's probably not a break. I mean, I don't know, but
I don't think
that's
it's a
pretty
break
standard. I sprained my ankle.
Yeah.
Experience.
And then, okay.
So nobody knows what we're talking about, by the way. Laura thinks she broke her ankle.
I'm going to urgent care, which is not
and
my
she's mad
MO,
about it.
But I feel like a dum-dum because every time I go, literally the thing I thought of was just put on clean underwear, Laura. I don't know if they're going to see your underwear, but put them on. And then I looked at my legs and I was like, you cannot find a razor. I haven't been able to find a razor for the last 2 weeks because we moved. And now I'm staring at my legs and my broken toenails. And I'm like, oh, please, God, please let it be a hideous doctor. Because if it's a cute doctor, I'm going to have a real
tough
time.
Then what's going to happen?
And then I'm just going to feel embarrassed that this person that's very attractive is staring at my unshaven legs.
But you wouldn't feel embarrassed if a person who wasn't attractive was staring at your own shape.
I would feel probably embarrassed either way. But I don't know. I'm not done living. Like, I still want to look my best among people who are potential mates. Is that wrong to say in, you know, from one marriage therapist to another that I want to put my best foot forward? Get it?
Yeah, I gotcha.
So anyway, I'm going to go in with my hairy shaved legs.
Yeah.
And I have so many good doctor stories, though, of just really, really making a mess of myself in front of doctors and just embarrassing myself. Have I ever told you this story? I have to share it. I have to share it. I think it is one of the funniest stories that I have to offer. Settle in. but this, children should not this be is in the room. Be,
this is my favorite. When people tell you how funny the story they're about to tell you is. And you're like, okay, well, I guess I just got to get my popcorn.
Yeah, yeah. My blanket, my pillow. I'm going to try and I'm going to time myself. Are you ready? Okay.
Sure.
25 years old, and I knew that I was going to quit my job. And as a 25-year-old, quitting your job, you don't know when your next, good job's going to come along where you're going to have health insurance. So I made all of my doctor appointments, and I call and I say, I don't care. I just need to get in to see the doctor so I can get my annual exam taken out of the way. Annual exam, by the way, is a pap smear when women say annual exam. So that's what I'm talking about. So they say, no problem. We've got you scheduled. We'll see you tomorrow morning at like 7:30 a.m. So they basically put me on the books before the clinic opened so that they could see me. I'm there. I'm ready for my annual exam. And in walks a very attractive male doctor that is probably about 4 years older than me. Mm-hmm. So sitting across from me is
a story before.
Very attractive 29-year-old man. It's a good one, right?
Sure.
Okay. So I'm like, great. This is awesome. And he starts off the appointment with, hi, Mrs. Heck. I was, Miss Mygill or whatever my main name is. It's nice to see you. What can I do for you today? And I kind of wanted to be like, duh, I'm here to get an annual, right? Like, and I said, well, I just figured it's 7:30 in the morning. Why don't you take a look at my cookie jar? So inappropriate. Right? But I was so nervous to begin with. Mm-hmm. And here's this attractive man. And now I'm sweating. And I'm sweating through like the paper gown that they give you. They give you these super unattractive, uncomfortable paper gowns. Mm-hmm. And I'm making spots on the actual bench that I'm sitting on. So he's like, okie dokie, let's go ahead and do this. So then he's kind of like fumbling around the room. And this is all in hindsight, but he's gathering his tools, whatever it might be. And he gives me my annual pap smear, blah, blah, blah. Because I'm into continuity of care, even though I had a new job, I went back to see him the second year. And this is, they've changed, annual exams where you don't have to get them every year, but it used to be every year. Go back to see him the second year.
So they're no longer annual exams.
And they're no longer, exactly, they're no longer annual exams. So I go back to see him the second year. And then somewhere along the way, I had like a sports injury of some sort. And no, it wasn't a sports injury. I think I went in for my third annual. So this is the third year seeing this attractive male. And I'm going to spare you the details of like conversation and whatever, the whole exam piece. But now we have built a rapport and trust. And I'm talking to him and I notice he's wearing cycling socks. And I start a conversation. I was like, oh, are you a cyclist? He says, yes, I am a cyclist. And so we start down the path of talking about sports. And he said, and what do you do? And so I start explaining about like what I do. And then I kind of said, well, I would love for my now husband, to do these things with me. But he actually broke his ankle and he's got a bad back, blah, blah, blah. And he said, oh, you should bring him in to see me. And I was a little taken back. I was like, why would I bring my husband in to see my lady doctor, my OBGYN? This doesn't make any sense. And I, I was like, that's really kind, but he has a specialist for that. And he said, no, I am a specialist. And I said, I don't understand what you're saying to me right now. And he said, well, I teach at the University of Washington, sports medicine. And I was like, so confused at this point that this doctor who's, please don't forget that he's deeply attractive. Okay. And I'm so nervous, but I'm also like not, it's not a horrible thing to go see an attractive doctor for your annual visit. And he said, I am a sports medicine doctor. And my mouth hit the floor. And I said, what do you mean? He goes, well, I specialize in, sports medicine. I actually work with the Seahawks and blah, blah, blah. And I could not tell you the amount of silence that ensued in that room. And I said, I'm so confused right now. You're not an OBGYN. He said, no, you are the only person I have been giving annual exams to for the last 3 years. And I have always wondered why you come back to see me. And I had a moment where I was like, Oh my God. I'm going to have a panic attack. I'm going to cry. I'm still in this paper gown. Now I'm sweating.
Oh,
it's like
man.
Now dark pink because every part of it is wet. Oh, so this poor guy, I'm sure I would love to hear his story. of he's like, there was this time where this one young girl kept coming back to see me for her annual exams. And I swear to you, all I work on is like hips, ankles. Anyway, that's my story. And I hope you enjoy it.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry that you broke your foot, maybe.
Ankle.
Thursday. What's ankle. Today? Today's Thursday. And it's a sad day.
Yeah, it is a sad day. I'm super grumpy.
Yeah.
But that story actually made me feel better.
Good. Yeah, because in 2 days, it's going to be a Saturday.
It's... you were working around that one, weren't you?
I did.
Yeah. Is that a Zach original or is that something you heard a while back?
No, I
found
it.
You claim it?
I found it.
Anyway, that's what's happening in my life. I'm falling apart. My eye won't stop twitching.
Mm-hmm.
I got a green screen that won't work. I got all sorts of things to complain about. What's happening in your life?
Do you remember how when we first started asking people to review the podcast, we got a negative podcast or negative review and they were all mad about how we talked about the Women's World Cup?
No.
Yeah. This one guy was like, I turned that on and all they did was talk about the World Cup for 10 minutes. And I was like, oh no, because all I want to do right now is talk about the World Cup. And I think that guy's going to be mad.
Well, I mean, we haven't even hit 10 minutes into the podcast, so we still have some time. I wonder what percentage of our folks actually fast forward. I mean, there's no like magic amount of time, but in my podcasts that I listen to, I always fast forward because I know that they do like their ad reads at the very beginning.
Yeah.
And I'm like, boop, 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 5 minutes in. I know we're going to get to content.
So the Women's World Cup, I'm obsessed. Of course, I've been watching that nonstop. I don't need to talk about it. But speaking of podcasts, I found one that I think is hilarious that I want to recommend. In fact, I want to have them on the podcast.
Okay.
It's a podcast
called... It's
going
to have nothing to do with marriages, I guarantee it.
Sort of does.
Mm-hmm.
It's a true crime podcast.
Yeah, that's called, such a stretch. That is such a stretch. That.
You haven't even let me finish.
Okay, go on.
It's called Who Shat on the Floor at My Weddings?
Shat?
Who shat on the floor at my wedding? And they say it all the time. Did you shat on the floor? Who shat on the floor? Did you shit? Did you see the shit? Because this couple got married on a boat. And at the end of the wedding in the bathroom, there was shit on the floor. And they didn't know who did it or how it happened. So they decided to make a podcast out of it. It is hilarious.
Hold on. That's the only thing they talk about?
That is investigating? They try to solve the crime of who shat on the floor at my wedding.
Is it 2 episodes long?
It's about 9 episodes long.
And that's it?
Yeah.
Okay, spoiler alert, do they solve the crime?
I'm not done with the podcast yet.
Do they bring other people on? Do they investigate?
They interview guests from the podcast. I mean, guests from the wedding.
From the wedding.
They talk to like a real detective and get the real detective's advice about how to do the investigation. And,
That's funny, but I don't know if that's... People email us every single day, Zach, and they say, hey, I've got this person that I think would be a great fit. And I, every single day, email them back and say, I don't think it's going to be a great fit. And if they were to hear...
I want to tell you something else.
Yes.
With apologies to all those people who want to be on the podcast, I'm happy to, obviously we have some great guests from time to time. I forgot to tell you this. I asked 2 people to be on the podcast. I haven't heard back from them yet.
Well, it's because here's something you guys don't know that I learned about Zach is that Zach, I believe what you call it is like, I call it stalking, but you call it something different. Making connections.
Networking.
So Zach networks with folks by continually sending them direct messages to their Instagram. It's not creepy at all. Not at all.
All right. Well, listen, Neil Patrick Harris. I invited Neil Patrick Harris to be on the podcast.
I'm watching him right now because my son just started a show that's really cute. It's like a series of unfortunate events.
Let me sneak it.
Like
yeah.
That. Yeah.
I belonged to his like email exchange thing and he just turned 50. And I was like, I just turned 50. You should come on the podcast. And we should talk about turning 50.
Did you call it an email exchange as if it's a two-way street? I believe
Well, he sends me emails. He sends me emails.
Oh,
yeah.
Zach, you are a hoot.
I replied to the emails and I was like, I want to talk to Neil Patrick Harris about his relationship and about his ideas. But he hasn't written me back yet. I think he's kind of busy. But you want to know who else I invited?
Yeah. Email exchange. Even the way that your brain interprets the one-way communication is hilarious.
Do you want to know who else I invited?
Who?
Barack Obama.
Oh, shut up. I just guessed it. I swear to you, I just guessed it. Did I not? You heard it.
You were
it.
Saying, I did. I sent Barack and Michelle Obama an email through their website.
Why did they not respond back to me?
I was like, I know you guys are probably busy, but I think it would be really cool if you told people about your relationship. Why don't you come on our podcast?
It's been about 6 years.
Anyway, I'm hunting elephants. Hunting elephants.
Okay. Yeah. You have an interesting way of hunting these elephants, assuming that the elephants want to be hunted. That is the assumption that you have.
Listen,
that
one
is
day
very
it's
going to
land. One day I'm going to say, hey, guess who I got? Mm-hmm. And you're going to go, holy cow.
Holy moly. That was a really great hustle for the last 6 years. Well, I'm still putting it out there. But the difference between you and me is that I'm simply saying to the masses, Jake Gyllenhaal has been my jam for many years.
Yeah.
And this is not the first time that you've heard me put it out there. If you know Jake, give him my number. You can find it on any website and just have him send me a sweet little text message or call me. There's probably some sort of like ailment that he could look at and I will assume he's a doctor. Has he ever played a doctor? No. Okay, let's get to some content.
Let's get this show on the road.
I am so pumped to tell you about a product that my family has been using weekly this year, Factor Meals. Now, even though I do love to cook and get creative in the kitchen, this is sacred time that I rarely get anymore. And that's why I've enlisted the help of Factor Meals. So Factor Meals are freshly prepared, never frozen, zero prep meals at your fingertips in literally just 2 minutes. That's all it takes to reheat. So here's how Factor Meals go in my household. I will get a shipment of 6 fresh meals, all individually packaged. They are beautifully stacked in my fridge at eye level so that they are the first thing that my hubby and child reach for when they're hungry. With both husband and I working from home, we're able to stay on track with our keto meal plan by lunching with Factor Meals. And my always hangry kiddo will often have a Factor meal after school instead of a face full of chips. I'm telling you, it is no wonder that Factor is America's number one ready-to-eat meal kit. Each week, you have 35 different meals to choose from, whether it be keto or vegan or dairy-free or low-cal, Factor has got you covered. Head over to factormeals.com/MTR50. Use the code MTR50 to get 50% off. That's MTR50 at factormeals.com/MTR50 to get 50% off. I'm feeling better already. This is great news.
See what happens when you talk to me?
I know.
Good at my job.
Makes me feel better to make fun of you.
That's okay. I have a boundary between your making fun of me and my sense of self.
Oh. Did you talk to your therapist about that? Do I ever make it into the therapy room?
I would say I've been with my therapist for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I might have talked about you twice.
But was it like in passing, like a 5 minute thing?
It was like,
thing?
I went to Germany with Laura.
And then you talked about Germany, but not Laura.
Well, there's some parts of Germany that you're a part of, but
yeah.
No, you're not a main character in my therapy time.
Oh, that's a... That you should write
compliment.
In Christmas. That's a compliment. You should write that in a Christmas card.
Just want you to know, I've been in therapy for 4 years and I hardly ever talk about you.
When I rolled my ankle, I was actively processing something and I kept thinking, this is good for you, Laura. Like, keep processing, just keep running. You're going to work through this. But the one thing that I did come to is I don't even want to talk about this. I don't, it makes my eye twitch, but I'm actively working on processing some stuff. And a lot of it means that I'm needing to put myself in other people's shoes and get over whatever I'm experiencing. Like if I'm experiencing any sort of like pain or injustice or whatever it might be, I have to set that on the shelf because the only way out of it is for me to say, how must this person be feeling? There's got to be a reason that they're interacting with me in this way. There has to be. And that's been the process that I've been going through. And it was going great until I rolled my ankle. Now I'm grumpy and stuck.
I think though that you're onto something. I mean, I've been doing this a lot. I've sort of switched gears a little bit in my practice to kind of focus on this theory that I have, which is that everything is made up.
Okay.
Can I talk to you about that? Everything is made up. None of it is real. It's part of actually what I feel that having gone to Germany and Korea, it's like we just made this thing up. We made up what land was important. We made up what language was going to sound like. We made up what personalities our country or, you know, we just made it up. We had reasons for making it up. you know, because we lived on an island or because we lived really close to countries that threatened us or because, you know, there's all kinds of things, but none of it is real. And so when it comes to, particularly when it comes to clients in my office, when they start talking about, let's see, what was the story yesterday? The story yesterday was they were having guests over for dinner and she was preparing and he sat down to play the piano while they were getting ready for their dinner party.
Yeah.
And she was like, that's not how you do it. I grew up in a military family and we all do it this way until it's ready. And when the dinner is ready, then you can play the piano.
Okay.
And he was like, well, I grew up in a musical family. And when you're in a musical family, music is part of the getting ready. And it's the ambiance of how you create the tone and the spirit of the event.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, both of those are just made up.
Like you neither just made, of them are right.
They just made them up. And
yeah.
So what I started to say is you got to make up a third thing because the reality is you no longer live in a military family and you no longer live in a musical family.
Yes.
You live in this other family.
Yep.
And you got to make something else up. And when you have options, like you're walking along and you're processing your thing and you have an option, you have options about what to make up.
Mm-hmm.
You can make up stuff that is generous or you can make up stuff that is really selfish, you know? And so for her, for example.
Yeah.
She could have, she had an opportunity to make up, this guy, he doesn't help. And look at me, woe is me. And I have a problem. And now he's the source of my problem. She could also have made up, wow, I'm really glad that this man lives in my house and plays music. I never had music in my house. And
totally,
I still need help with the dishes, but isn't it cool that there's this thing? She could have made that up. And
yeah.
In either case, she now is directing traffic for how the rest of it goes. And by the way, he had an opportunity to make stuff up too, because she was like, can you help me with this stuff? And he was like, can't you see? And like he made up this nagging wife of mine who doesn't ever let me experience joy is trying to take me away from it. She made that up and then they had a fight.
Yep.
He could have made up, my wife who works so hard needs a little bit of extra help and I could, you know what I mean? So I'm all about like just really examining what are we making up and why are we making it up and what options are available as we make stuff up.
The thing that came into my mind, and I do this a lot with couples, is the question mark of what happens when you have two people that are paired and each of you have your own story. And what you said is you need to make up a third thing.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm seeing in my practice is a couple of things. One is that I say, we need to make up a third thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, but we've been doing this dance for 10 years of, and it goes back to the book. There's three things. I need you to be more like me. I need you to be more like my family.
We've had this fight before.
Exactly. So that kind of popped into my head, right? Like I need you to, we're having this argument because I need you to be more like me and like my family, how we did it with this example that you gave. But what I'm hearing people say is, well, we usually just sort of give in to her because she has the most level of anxiety and I'm more laissez-faire. So you have two people that partner and one person gets really spun up about this makes me really uncomfortable. And let's just say, for example, that it's her. And so she says, I need you to stop playing the piano and come and help me because this is the way that we do it. And if you don't come and help me, I'm going to get really anxious before the guests come over and I need this done, this done, this done. And so rather than him expressing his needs, he goes, well, you know what? She's the squeaky wheel. She's the one that has the most level of anxiety. And I tend to be a little more laissez-faire. Is it that big of a deal if I don't play the piano and create ambiance? Yeah, probably not. And it's just because they're different human beings. Like it ruffles her feathers a whole lot more. And so for the last 10 years, he's been just sort of like acquiescing to her because she tends to get more anxious or she... It, you know, has more of a voice or more power, or whatever it might be. What do you do in those situations? Because I'm seeing that show up a lot. And what I end up finding with him, and this goes a little bit into maybe the previous conversation we had about like this nice guy syndrome, but I don't think it's about being a nice guy. I think it's just temperament and that there tends to be resentment that builds into that conversation. I've been giving in to you for the last 10 years because you get more anxious, more depressed, like you're, what am I trying to say? polyvagal, your nervous system, your constitution, yeah, maybe your nervous system gets way more activated and fired up than me, or I have more coping skills. And so my discomfort, I just cope with it. So I think that's something that I want to ask you about is, what do you do when you say, come up with this third thing, like make some kind of an agreement, and then they go into it. And the story is that we just have been doing what she wants to do for the last 10 years because of X, Y, and Z.
Yeah. I mean, it won't surprise anyone that I think this has to begin at the level of personal responsibility. Like, responsibility. You have an ability to respond. And typically what the more I kind of lean into this stuff, the more I'm realizing that, like, usually when we are responding in ways that are unrelational, that are not helpful and that don't lead to intimacy, it's because we're responding out of some adaptation that we've made as children. Like, we learn from about 0 to 10 that the world is broken, doesn't work. Like, I'm hungry and I don't get fed immediately, or I'm cold and where's my blanket? And, you know, and sometimes it doesn't work because of trauma. Some of those traumas are lowercase traumas. Like, my dad worked all the time, or my mom was, you know, over functioning, you know, and some of those traumas are capital T traumas. Like, I don't know, I was sexually abused, or my parents were alcoholics, or my brother had special needs. Like, there can be this like major thing. And so then from about 10 to 20, we learn how to make that pain go away. We create adaptations that help us like not do that. And we get really good at them. We get really good at these strategies. So again, either overfunctioning, or maybe I become a teacher's pet, or maybe I learn how to go to my room and read or whatever. And then we become adults, and those strategies that we're really good at and that helped us out a lot, they're no longer relevant. They're no longer valid. And so to me, the conversation in my office, when we start to go, well, this is how, and I just felt, and I needed to go, and I go, well, who's doing that? Like, who is that? How old are you in that space?
Sure.
And what would it mean for you to actually accept and adopt that you're now a 35-year-old or 45-year-old or 55-year-old? Lord, I have the cutest, they're 80. They're 80.
80-year-old clients?
80 and 82, I think. And they're coming in.
What a
to
joy.
To work it out. You know,
what a joy.
Like, to figure it out. And I'm like, why are you here? Like, aren't you just trying to stay alive? You know?
You know what? Let's all hope that we have the capacity to say, of all the things I'm going to make better in my life, my relationship is one of those things that's like a high priority.
Yeah.
That you're not focused on your health, or you're not focused on, you know, like being able to pay off your Social Security or whatever, pay off your Social Security. That you're,
that's not a thing, but
no, it's not. It's not. It might be by the time we are supposed to be collecting.
No,
we're
but I think,
just paying.
Back to my point, like, I think it starts at the level of personal responsibility. And in order to respond, you have to appreciate and understand that that response needs to be a response to the adaptation that you're making. And then how do you begin the conversation about how do we meet in the middle, or meet together as functional adults in the process?
So here, the thing that I'm thinking about is, I don't know why I'm making her the person that's like, you know, having an experience that she's saying, you know, I get really anxious when people come over to the house. And it's a lot of heavy lifting that you're explaining in this scenario of being able to say to your partner, I'm having a response. That response is adaptive. It's probably not serving me right now. Mm-hmm. So she's saying, I'm super anxious and I need you to stop what you're doing and come my direction. Come do whatever is going to help relieve my anxiety. The heavy lifting is for her to say, actually, you can develop some tools, some coping mechanisms that support you current day. Is that what you're saying?
You switched pronouns there, so I wasn't sure what you're saying. I think I can say to her,
okay,
yes, you can develop some tools. Like, this is a thing that you can actually practice.
Yeah.
And I think it's exciting. I personally think it's exciting.
Yeah.
You can kind of latch onto this notion a little bit and go, oh, you know, what would be a 5-year-old response to me? What would be a 15-year-old response to me? What would be a 25, 35 now that I'm 45? Like, what if I showed up here the way I actually wanted to versus the way I just had a lot of muscle memory for? And I think, you know, we do this for lots of reasons. Did I tell you I was taking tennis lessons this summer? taking tennis lessons from this kid at my pool, but
no, but I would have paid money to watch that.
Oh my gosh, so fascinating. Fascinating. 17-year-old kid, and he's been great for me. But, you know, part of what he taught me even the first day, he's like, number one, I noticed you're not looking at the ball. And I was like, oh, that's a thing, because you're supposed to do in sports, just keep your eye on the ball, right? It's like basic sports 101.
Okay.
But then the other one is my forehand, my elbow is like up against my ribs all the time. That's how I learned how to play tennis. So he's got me straightening my arm.
Yeah.
There's a metaphor in here somewhere about how if you want to hit the ball better, you got to move away from it. Because if you're going to straighten your arm, you have to move. But anyway, that's another time.
You haven't like formulated I haven't figured that one out yet. Yeah.
The other part that he taught me is if I'm trying to serve the ball down over the net, I have to hit it up. That's super weird. Okay. So, but not my point. My point is when I'm playing tennis and I get tired, like if I've been playing for about an hour, my elbow comes into my hip, even in spite of my lesson. And unless I go, wait, what did Sam say? Oh yeah. Sam said, move away from the ball, straighten your arm, keep your eye on it, you know, move through like, and then I can reset and I can go, I can start hitting the ball again, even if I'm tired, but I have to be that much more conscious of it. But my muscle memory, my adaptation that I learned truly as an adolescent was to swing my forehand with my elbow against my hip, my rib cage.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that alone has helped me like, kind of do that in my office, which is to go, hey, when you can notice that your elbow is against your rib cage, or when you notice that you're starting to behave in a way you don't want to behave,
sure,
in a way that's not relational, you got to go back and remember your training, what we said, what you learned in therapy, or what you learned in the podcast that you listened to, or what you learned. And I think that on the tennis court for me, that's really a moment of going, ah, it's not working. Okay, wait, what? I know how to do this. All right, Zach, pull it together for a little bit. You're tired. Go ahead and figure out, go ahead and give yourselves a few more swipes. And the way I've been telling clients to get that extra time, like that extra space is when you're in an argument that's not going well, just say to your partner, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I have to pee.
Just give them enough time to be able to reset.
I'll be back. And then you go to the bathroom and you stay there as long as you need to sort of cycle through the things that you're learning, like, right? And if you're only going to try it out in response to this podcast, cycle through and go through, like, think about what you made up. I made this up about him. And like, what other options do I have in terms of what I can make up?
Yeah.
And I think if those options are based in gratitude and generosity, you have a lot more hope for repair. And she was like, I said this to her yesterday, this couple about the piano. And she goes, well, if he says, I got to go to the bathroom, how do I not just like circle the bathroom door until he is ready to come out? Like, I'm just going to be like, and I was like, that's a great question. What if you chose gratitude? Like, I'm so glad that I'm not in this fight right now. I'm so grateful that I have this second to breathe a little bit. Start with gratitude.
Yeah.
And then maybe move to generosity. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. I'm going to give him the opportunity to play the piano, or I'm going to give him the opportunity to explain why he, you know what I mean? Like gratitude and generosity, you make that up and things shift. And it is practice. It is absolutely 100% practice.
I've actually done this. I mean, we had this conversation a while ago and I think I even explained on the podcast, if not to my clients, that I took a moment where I had a drive where I got into it with my husband. I said some hurtful things and then I got into the car because I had to go somewhere. And between the amount of time that I was in the vehicle and when I got to the location I was at was about 20 minutes, which we know is about how long it takes for you to sort of reset from the inside. But not only with my body resetting and sort of returning back to my logical brain, because I was in an emotional state, which is fine. Emotions are amazing, but sometimes they can hijack you.
Yeah.
I remember you saying practice gratitude. And so for 20 minutes, all I thought about was all the ways in which my husband is a phenomenal man outside of the relationship. So I was thinking how he's an amazing provider. I was thinking about how he's an amazing parent. All of these things, and just thinking about those pieces of who he is, not about the relationship, because it was really hard for me to tap into gratitude when it was relational between the two of us. But I could tap into how he's a really awesome son to his mom, and how he's really an amazing golfer, and he's dedicated, and blah, 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 all these things. So that really helped me. So I remember that piece. I'm just thinking about capacity. Like, when do we have the capacity to do that if we're already at a place where we're just overwhelmed with anything else? It takes a lot of capacity and hard work to tap into gratitude, a lot of capacity and hard work to do something different. I'm actually reading these books that's talking about how we become just a nation that's constantly looking for the easy way out and comfort. And what you're saying to me is, you might be experiencing some discomfort, some friction in your relationship because you're relying on these old adaptive ways of responding that doesn't serve you in your relationship. But the comfort is that I've been doing this thing adaptively for the last 25 years. Uh-huh. That's comfort.
Yeah. And well, it's easy. It doesn't take any work. Like,
it doesn't take any work. Yeah. And so the only, it's like you might feel comfortable leaning into this adaptive habit, but what's uncomfortable is when it rubs against your partner and the two of you are creating friction. And so that has to create enough friction for you to say, it's actually going to be easier for you to learn a new habit or a new adaptive way to be able to respond to your partner. I'm finding so many, like, how do we get around the resistances?
Well,
it's too hard.
It's not too hard. And, you know, I think, again, part of how you get around it is you decide this is exciting. This is going to be fun. Like, I'm going to see what options are available. What else is on the menu? Because I've been eating off a pretty limited menu for a while.
Yeah.
And there's bound to be something on here that tastes or feels better, that is actually healthier for me and fills me up. Like, I think that can be fun to cruise the menu for stuff that you haven't done. And just try it out. Literally, yeah. It's all made up. So who cares? And I think what you'll find is that when you choose generosity and gratitude, and I'm not even talking about like, be thankful for what you have. I'm just saying, I wonder what is possible to be thankful for here. This guy's driving me fucking bonkers. And but I wonder what opportunity is available to me. Thank you for letting me use my new skills.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for teaching me that I too am a part of, like, that if I'm going to be change anything, I have to take responsibility for myself because you're not going to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, you can even be sort of, but you can, if you start there, then so much more opens up to you, which I think is just kind of fun to play with.
Yeah.
And what I've been telling, you know, I couldn't remember if I'd said this on the podcast before or not, but the reality is when you decide in your head to make stuff up, it actually does, the other person doesn't matter. And I don't mean they don't matter, like they don't matter. But I mean, like, if you make up the benevolent story about them and meet them with that.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how they came to you, because what are you going to do? What are they going to do? They're not going to double down and be like, no, you can't be nice to me right now.
Yeah.
And I'm still going to be a big jerk. You know, like, usually, even if they have done something wrong, or they're grappling with their own internal shame, or their own adaptation is rearing its head, and you meet it with gentleness and like generosity and curiosity.
Yeah.
It doesn't have anywhere to go. It doesn't have anywhere to go.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a gal in my practice whose husband thinks she's loud. And she is loud. I was, when she was in my office by herself, she was talking and I heard myself get loud and I was like, oh, I'm just totally matching your voice. And we talked about it. I was like, how long have you been loud?
Yeah.
She goes, I think I was loud forever. Like, I'm always loud. I walk loud and I bang stuff around and I just have a, so your volume starts at like an 8. She's like, yeah, I mean 6, 8. And he starts at like 2, 4. I was like, Why don't you try lowering your voice like this and see what happens. You know, like, maybe who knows? I wasn't trying to correct her. I was like, just try it out. If he matches you and he gets big when you get big, why don't you just practice? And then, but I think you're talking about the resentments and I think I'm trying to answer a question about resentments. And for me, one of the ways that you get around resentment is you decide that this is just part of an adventure that I'm on called life. And I can either make it easier or make it worse. And I can be 80 and make it better if I want to, you know, like.
So I want to take everything that you just shared and I'll give you an example. And this is someone in my life and this is what I was running and processing. And what I said is that the only way that I could get through my side, which was I'm feeling hurt, I'm feeling criticized, I'm feeling like I'm not enough, is to pause long enough to say, okay, those are interesting stories. I mean, that's, those were the feelings that I was having, but what's a story that I can make up about this other person that's going to help me understand why they're responding to me in this way?
Yeah.
Because I'm definitely feeling criticized, and I probably was. And so running along, and I start making up this story of, okay, they're criticizing me because they want something better. And criticism is interesting. Like when people, what they were doing is they were offering all this advice, right? Like you should consider this, think about it in this way. Have you thought about this? You should do it this way. And remember, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, dang, why are you telling me all the ways in which I'm failing? Why are you giving me all this advice? Can you just tell me that I'm doing a good enough job and that I'm smart and intelligent and thoughtful and all these things? But they weren't. And so got off the phone and I was like, dang, I feel so criticized. And then I started to make up this story about them. And I, the story that I made up is that they find value in supporting other people. And so really this criticism is by offering advice, what they're doing is they're actually wanting to support me.
Yeah.
And they want to help me and they want to alleviate any sort of pain that I might be experiencing or roadblocks. And so by offering advice to me, that's their way of helping and supporting. And it's also the only way in their life that they have been able to show love for other people or that it's been received by other people. And so as I'm telling this story, I find that I'm starting to, my own like feelings are starting to subside. Okay. I don't feel as attacked. Okay. It's coming from a place of love.
Yeah.
And so that's really what was going on is as I was running, I'm processing, but the only way I could process was how do I create a new story about this person in my life that is filled with generosity and gives them the benefit of the doubt and really holds them up rather than putting them down.
Yeah. And then you get to say, hey, I just want you to know, like, I really appreciate you helping me troubleshoot this thing. Like, it really goes a lot. It helps me out a lot.
I didn't appreciate it.
But,
I didn't.
But also, like, it doesn't work for me. That way doesn't exactly work for me. Like, I wonder if we can break, like, could we take a different strategy? Because I think you've got really good ideas, but I'm not going to be, like, my own self isn't ready to hear some of that. You know what I mean? Like, you can sort of do both, right? You can kind of appreciate both. And the reality is, that's her adaptation. I'm assuming, I don't know if it's a her or not, but like, that's her adaptation. She learned to make the pain go away, to fix it.
Yep.
And so she's doing what she's really, really good at.
Totally.
And it doesn't work for you.
Mm-mm. And they probably don't even know that it doesn't work for me.
Totally.
It probably works for everybody else in their life and people feel love and they feel
or they go away
to and all of that. So I think the response to that is, you know, I'm feeling so loved that you care enough to try and troubleshoot these things with me. And at the same time, it's just not received the same way that I think you're intending it. Because the way that I receive it is I hear you're not good enough to think about these things on your own. You're not doing a good enough job. And that just kind of sends me into a spiral. It's not about you. It's about me. Mm-hmm. And so I know you're trying to show me love. Here's how I receive love. That's kind of where I've landed as far as how I would circle back.
Yeah. And that's the, you called it a dance earlier. That's the dance. You're trying to reorganize the dance because we keep stepping on each other's toes or because turns out I'm really good at, I actually think we're doing the cha-cha and you think we're doing the waltz. Like that's weird. We should probably do this other thing. Like I think resetting, say, I got to pee. I'm so sorry. I got to pee. And then let's reset the whole thing. And maybe you're like, you come out of the bathroom, you go, what were we talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah. Sorry. I don't have the energy to get spun up about that again, but, tell me what you really need right now. I mean, I don't know. There's so many options, but I think you have to start with the reality that mostly I'm making it up and it's not real.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's true, if you buy that premise, then why don't you just start making up stuff that's more benevolent?
Make up something better.
Yeah. I do that with you sometimes because I think I have a bias in me that everything that comes at me is a criticism. So you'll say, tomorrow's podcast, let's talk. Like that was I think what you sent me yesterday.
Huh.
And my first thing in my brain was like, okay, fine, talk. That's like the sound of what came into my brain.
Uh-huh.
Great. What do you want to talk about?
Kind of
it's the same as it always is. We meet at 8 and But then you were like, is this the da-da-da? And then I was like, yep, that's it. And I just, in my brain, I just sort of said, yeah. And I think you actually asked me to do that once. You're like, can you just assume that I'm like asking you with my sing-songy voice? And I was like, sure, I could try that out. You know, it's so I don't, again, it's way more about me than it is about you necessarily, but it's another example of just where, like, I saved myself a lot of misery,
right?
By not deciding that you were being critical, you know?
So, totally. Yeah. Well, first of all, it's not a total story that you're making up, because that is the, of the Four Horsemen, criticism is something that I, and condemned. Like, I definitely.
Oh,
like,
yeah, I totally. No,
you.
I know. That's why I talked about you in Germany.
Yeah.
To my therapist.
Like, I mock you. I make jokes about, like, at your expense. And, like, yes, it's definitely critical. So the fact that you go toward creating a story that is putting me in that light, I can see why that's occurring. And I think it is really helpful for you to just assume the best until I completely screw
it
up.
Yeah. I was working really hard in Germany. In fact, I don't know if you even noticed, but we got on the plane on the way home, and I just turned to you and I said, I'm going to need you to stop.
Oh, I don't remember. Was I fidgeting?
No, you were complaining and criticizing things like
you?
This. And yeah. I can't believe you got the seats too close to the bathroom. That's what it was.
Oh, yeah,
we're
going
to have fun smelling
yeah.
the thing all the way home. And I was like,
yes.
I'm going to need you to stop.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I'm done with the nitpicking about everything. So.
Oh,
but
gosh.
That was good. That was hard work. That was me just kind of deciding to make stuff up.
Well, the good news is that it doesn't take much for me to, my husband did this recently where I just need direct feedback. I need you to say this right here is not working well for me.
Yeah, fine.
Because, and I will tell you, the direct feedback goes over so much better. It gets my attention. I think everybody's got to be like that. But
maybe,
yeah, I said something, said something to my husband.
My 20-year-old wife isn't like that.
Oh, she's not. She doesn't want the direct feedback.
No. You gotta circle the wagons and circle them.
No.
And then you gotta write it down. And then you gotta.
Mm-mm. Tell me this here, right at this very moment is not working for me. I don't like the tone that you're using.
Yeah.
Ryan has said that to me a couple of times because I've just been in a state of just absolute, my brain is fried and I have not been showing up as my best self the last few weeks. And it just hasn't been fun for me either. But he said very directly, I don't like the tone that you're using with me. It sounds critical.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay. Thank you so much for sharing that with me. I will 100% make changes to make you feel better. Oh my gosh. Like, I just, so much better to get that direct feedback. Okay. We gotta land this.
You gotta go. Yeah.
Thank you in advance, everyone, for recognizing that whatever showed up today for Laura Heck is a bit of a, not a lot's making a whole lot of sense in my head these days, but I still showed up and hopefully Zach was able to provide some solid information for you.
Let me also let me just do two housekeeping things. Number one is if you're enjoying the podcast, go ahead and review it on Apple iTunes and give us 5 stars because there's a thing that's happening that I would be grateful if you went and drove our number up a little bit because of that, especially because of that guy with the World Cup who didn't like the World Cup. So we want to
really
bounce him up. The
and
second
it's
one
totally
is,
fine if you say Zach is amazing. We and you only talked about Zach.
You don't even have to write anything. Just click the 5 star so our little average goes up. Yeah. The other thing is, I mentioned last week that Rebecca and I took a workshop, a marriage workshop that we have found immensely valuable. And then we signed up for another thing that we're doing in a couple of weeks. And I'm really excited about it. And in one case, it was like $1,000. And the second case is more like $100. And I just think, like, we have this workshop coming up in October. And I think, what is it? $450 or something. I don't know exactly,
it's
but
less than that for early.
You guys,
bird, yeah.
It's worth it. It's worth it to sit down with your partner for a day and a half. And just focus on you. Like, if the price tag is a big deal, just trust me. Like, I've spent now $1,000 and $100, and I don't know if I know the difference, but $400 or whatever it is a great deal. And it's, if you're thinking about it, let me tell you, like, it's worth it. So sign up for the workshop if you're even kind of half thinking about it. It's in October, and go
on
iTunes.
It's on our website, Marriage Therapy Radio, on the right hand side.
Click on the 5 stars and. Yeah, that's it. Sorry that we rambled a little bit today, but it was actually kind of fun. I like talking.
Okay. We're landing it. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Marriage Therapy Radio. So Zach was talking about our fall intensive. It's on October 20th and 21st. It's actually at the early bird rate. So it's $395 right now. It does go up to $450 after August 30th. So if you're hearing this in real time, just go and read a little bit of information on the website. But more importantly, it's not about necessarily what we show up, although we have phenomenal content. We're going through the 7 principles for making marriage work. It's really about the experience that you have just focusing and dedicating on your relationship for 8 hours with your partner. That's the experience that we are chasing and creating for you. So you can find that information on marriagetherapyradio.com, right hand side. Actually, at the top, if you just click on workshops, you'll find that information. Thanks for all of your time and attention, making your relationship better today than it was yesterday.